Coming up on Path to Zero.
Not only are we getting a cleaner burning transportation fuel that has lower carbon emissions, we're doing it with lower emissions from the facility.
Welcome to Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low carbon future. Your host is Tucker Perkins, engineer, entrepreneur, business leader, speaker, and clean energy industry veteran, who now serves as president and CEO of the Propane Education and Research Council. Now, here's Tucker.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in for another episode of Path to Zero. We're kicking off season 3 of our podcast with this episode, and it's going to be a good one. Before the turn of the year, I was reading an article in the Washington Post about the major climate-related stories of 2021. The paper listed about 10 of the biggest stories, and striking to me was there was not one mention of innovation included in their lineup. Most were about government policymaking, maybe COP26 meetings. That's a really big miss. Throughout our industry, tens of thousands of people and tens of billions of dollars are being poured into decarbonization efforts, and that's the reason I wanted to start season 3 with a focus on innovation. My guest today is Nick Weinberg-Lynn. Nick is heading up a project to create one of the world's largest renewable fuels plants in the world, and believe it or not, it's in the San Francisco Bay Area. Today, Nick is leading a team of experts to convert a 125-year-old refinery into a facility that takes in cooking oil or grease or fats and then turns them into clean-burning diesel, jet fuel, and other renewable fuels. Nick, it is great to have you as our guest. Welcome to Path to Zero.
Thanks, Tucker. Happy to be here.
So, Nick, we're going to talk a lot about renewable fuels, but let's first hear everything you want to tell us about Rodeo Renewed, and just what's going on with the business decision to create one of the world's largest renewable fuel plants.
Absolutely. No, I'm very excited to talk about it. And this project will transform the Rodeo Refinery. As you mentioned, we've been a valued community partner for 125 years. And, you know, with any business that's been in, you know, around in the marketplace for that long, we've transformed and adapted to the market along the way. And the way I see it, this is the next iteration and the next transformation. It allows us to use the kit we have on the ground here in Rodeo in the San Francisco Bay Area, to turn fats, oils, and greases into low carbon intensive, cleaner burning transportation fuels. And we could do it with a lot of our existing assets and with the employees that we have on the ground today.
You know, I've read a lot about this facility, and I see that the project is designed to clean the air and reduce the carbon emissions, the latter, of course, of which helps California advance towards its own goal of carbon neutrality. You talk about one data point that I really was proud to read about. You're projecting 80% less sulfur dioxide. So we talk so much about CO2. I love to talk about NOx, particulate matter. Finally, we're talking about something that we ought to talk about, right? Sulfur dioxide. You're projecting 80% reduction in sulfur dioxide emissions from the current refinery. Talk to us about just all the other advantages that comes from moving from a traditional refinery to a renewable refinery.
No, you hit on the SOx reduction as part of the transformation here. You know, if you kind of group all those criteria pollutants together, and folks that live in Rodeo, Hercules, Crockett, our fence line communities, that's really what they care about first and foremost. And the overall criteria pollutants will reduce by more than 50% as a part of this project. So not only are we getting a cleaner burning transportation fuel that has lower carbon emissions, we're doing it with lower emissions from the facility.
Nick, nobody wants to live near a traditional refinery, right? There are all these questions nowadays around equity and environmental justice, and certainly refineries and power plants, and even for that matter, big industry is always the villain, right? Do people want to live near a renewable refinery?
You know, I think they will. And a large part of it is the fact that we are a valued community partner. You know, we support the community in the area. We are largest contributor to the John Sweat Unified High School District. That is the local high school district, is the refinery and the Phillips 66 company. And really, You know, us being able to provide the meals to Bayo Vista, our fence line neighbor, us being able to provide a lot of advantages to Crockett and Hercules and Rodeo, and continue to be a valued part of the community is a large part of it. And then the employees and the jobs that we provide, not to mention, you know, our employees have to go out to lunch and eat and dinner and drinks and happy hour afterwards. And so us being plugged into the community, especially with where we are in the San Francisco Bay Area, is a huge advantage to the project.
Yeah, I think there's going to be so many learnings there, because at least if in my limited knowledge, this is probably one of the most urban refineries in this transition, and making these products that will be so critical to the ultimate benefit of all Californians. So let's talk about those products for a moment. There's a huge difference between conventional diesel fuel, renewable diesel fuel, and then biodiesel fuel. Would you kind of help us understand those differences?
Absolutely. So starting off with the point, right now, I'll use CARB, which is the California Air Resources Board. Let's talk their carbon intensity number to kind of scale these products when we talk about it. So roughly the carbon intensity of petroleum-based diesel, which meets all the CARB specs, is about 100 grams of CO2 equivalent per megajoule of energy, right? And you use that for the rough carbon intensity. And we can get into it a little bit more, but that's life cycle carbon intensity. So that accounts for transportation, for what the feedstocks are, for the emissions associated with making the fuel, all in number. Next would be biodiesel. Biodiesel is produced by the FAME process with fatty acid methyl esters. And biodiesel, while it uses similar feedstocks to renewable diesel, because of the way it's made, it doesn't have great cold flow pore properties. And that's an important distinction because it means that most engines can't run more than 20% biodiesel as a mixture. So in order to run that and sell biodiesel, you have to be able to blend it with either petroleum diesel or renewable diesel. And that kind of gets me to renewable diesel as the next step. And renewable diesel, really great because it allows existing engines to run it at 100%, right? So it's a drop-in replacement fuel. So when we talk about carbon intensity reductions and life cycle carbon emissions reductions of, you know, 60% plus, we're doing that tomorrow, right? Those are immediate climate benefit gains that you can get by using renewable diesel. And that's really an important distinction. In fact, Phillips 66, we've converted all of our 76 stations, which is the brand in California, to sell renewable diesel. And that's been done in the last 6 months. So really exciting developments out here in California.
So one of the outlets for your renewable diesel will be your own retail brand. That's really interesting. So what other products will you make there other than renewable diesel?
So we'll have the ability to make a renewable gasoline. So as part of the process of converting fats, oils, and greases to renewable transportation fuels, you make a gasoline range material that gets blended with petroleum gasoline to sell that in the CARBOB market or California's gasoline market. And then we'll have the ability to make a sustainable aviation fuel. So from our facility, you can make a jet fuel that is renewable. You know, and the airline industry, very difficult to decarbonize over time. And this is a great outlet, again, to get those life cycle carbon emission reductions with a fuel that you can use as a drop-in replacement fuel.
So renewable diesel, sustainable jet, and also renewable propane, right?
Renewable gasoline. So, you know, our facility actually isn't set up to make renewable propane here from a sales perspective. So what we do with the propane molecules, we'll feed them into our hydrogen plant. And so you end up making hydrogen here with the renewable propane that we then use in the processing to make renewable diesel.
You're in one of the most interesting places for the environmental movement, right? Kind of, you're close enough to Berkeley that we're gonna label you as being right there in Berkeley, which is probably where the Electrify Everything movement, I think, started. You know, how when you talk with the people in the area and generally the energy thought leaders, do you find them receptive to what you're doing, or do they want to perhaps suggest that there's a better way for you to do it? What do they say about you?
You know, the vast majority of the public is receptive. They have questions, right? As any member of the public should, and an elected official should. But we've been really heartened with the outpouring of support that we've gotten towards the project. And I think one of the critical aspects of this to point to is the environmental impact report process, right? California uses a process called CEQA, which is the California Environmental Quality Act, to judge these projects. So for a while, when I'm talking about the project and the emissions benefits and what it does today, people can kind of question that. Is it true? Is it not? Right? Is this Phillips 66 spin? When that document hits the public, which it did in mid-October of this year, all of the information, all the data that I claimed and everything about our project, that's included. And it's available for the public to consume. And I think that's really been heartening for us to look at. And of course, you've got, you know, powerful members of California Air Resources Board, the governor of California, Governor Newsom, that has said that liquid transportation fuels that are renewable are a really important part of the energy mix going forward.
I mean, I'll share with you a data point that stays in my mind because I use it almost every day. You said the carbon intensity of your renewable diesel is around, what did you say?
It'll be in the mid-30s.
Yeah, conventional diesel is around 100 and your renewable diesel will be around 30. Yep. I think a lot of listeners don't realize the carbon intensity of the electric grid today nationwide is about 154. So yes. you are so much cleaner than the electric grid today. And really, I don't know that the electric grid will ever catch a carbon intensity of 30, particularly as we think about efficient engines. Clearly I've seen where Governor Newsom talked about it. I'm well aware of kind of CARB's support, and CARB has been supportive, right? They will do anything. They're at the tip of the spear of trying to clean the air as much for health reasons, asthma particularly in where you are. So trying to rid the Bay Area of NOx more than anything else. So I see they're tremendously supportive. I still see, like, the San Francisco Chronicle wrote an article that said you really needed to rethink this idea and ditch crude oil for biofuels. What do you tell those critics?
It's a complicated discussion to start with, right? And everything's got sides and factors. And one, I like to stick to the facts. And the facts of the project show that, you know, if you look at what the critics are talking about hydrogen, right, and all of that is wound into our emissions calculations. And it's still an emissions reduction project, both at the source, so at the refinery, as well as producing a transportation fuel that has lower life cycle carbon emissions. And then I really want to remind the critics that there are employees here, right? And the labor and the workforce part of this is very important, right? This project enables us to continue to have the 650 employees and contractors that we do today at the facility doing renewable jobs in the future, right? And these are highly skilled family wage careers that we provide. And that's really important for the local community.
I'm going to give you a softball question, but I really want to ask you, because here you are, I can see you, maybe not everybody on Path to Zero will see you, but I can see you. You're a young guy. You're in the midst of a really important transformation of a big facility. Why are you doing that? I mean, why are you working in this oil and gas world, bringing out transformation? How do you find satisfaction in that every day?
You know, it's just really exciting to work in a refinery, right? I'll fully admit, right, when I was in college, I didn't envision myself working in an oil and gas facility when I was a chemical engineer at UCLA. But the people that work here are innovative, exciting, and we could do things at scale. Right. And that is an aspect of it right here. We're not talking about benchtop models. We're talking about more than a billion gallons of transportation fuel that we can produce here. And really, the oil and gas industry continues to adapt to the market. We allow ideas to flourish. You know, Phillips 66 has an R&D center. We talk about Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Right. We've got more than 200 PhDs and other engineers and scientists working to solve the next problem. And we are really an industry that's devoted to it. And I get more and more excited to work in this industry as I get to feel the innovation. And then we can see the solutions. By nature, engineers are problem solvers, and really climate change and the energy transition's the next problem that we're working to solve.
It's just refreshing to see, you know, youth and brilliance coming together to solve those problems. So I commend you for that. And I don't think most people understand, don't have the number exactly, but, you know, what do we consume around 50 billion gallons of diesel fuel annually in the United States. I think that's the number. And so people have no idea of the opportunity that exists to move that relatively dirty fuel into a much cleaner fuel by using renewable alternatives. Do you worry about your feedstock as you become more and more successful and renewable fuels becomes more successful? Do you worry about a feedstock that relies on fats and oils?
So this is a marketplace that we here at the Rodeo Renewed Project are uniquely situated to. We are putting in world-class pretreatment facilities, and that's really the heart of it. So we'll be able to take any renewable feedstock out there, right? Whether you're talking about brown grease or municipal waste greases or used cooking oils. The largest part of the capital investment for the Rodeo Renewed Project is the pretreatment unit. So will I be able to take worldwide feedstocks and be able to transport them into, transportation fuels? And that's the big difference here is the size and the amount of treating that we're going to be able to do for the feeds.
Talk to us about maybe some of the other investments that Phillips 66 is doing in renewable fuels, alternative fuels in that space. What are some of the other areas they are either investing or looking to invest?
Yeah, that's one of the really exciting parts of working at Phillips 66. And we talked about being at the tip of a lot of this energy transition at scale. I'll mention just at the site, right, we're looking to a solar project. So to put in a 24 megawatt peak AC, 90 acres of solar arrays here in the San Francisco Bay. And it is all in furtherance of lowering the carbon intensity of our transportation fuels. And that's a separate project than Rodeo Renewed discreetly. But it shows the direction that we're heading. As a company, Phillips 66, we're already making sustainable aviation fuel in our Humber facility in England, right? We just inked a deal with British Airways to be able to supply them. We're looking towards battery innovations and electrolysis, so green hydrogen. We have partnered with a company called Novonix. We make a component of the battery, but we really want to be within the whole battery chain. And so as a company, we're really diversified. We announced in January of 2021, an emerging energy organization to be able to be at the forefront of this. And it's driven by our research and development, but along with having all the facilities on the ground to make these things happen at scale.
Do you see that Phillips 66 will be moving to have, say, electric charging stations at the retail sites as well? Or do you see that electric charging will be probably in its own island somewhere?
I think it'll be interesting to see what the consumer demands. And it may be different in different parts of the country. But I certainly think that we'll respond to consumer demand.
Nick, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, I look forward to hearing more about your work at Rodeo Renewed.
Zero is a big number. Getting close to a zero emissions future starts with using the broadest mix of clean, low-carbon energy sources. You might be surprised to know that propane produces a lot of energy for thousands of purposes and millions of people with virtually zero particulate matter, zero impact to the ozone, zero toxicity, and zero potential for storage-related contamination. It's low NOx and low CO2 to boot. Path to Zero is sponsored by Propane. Energy for everyone. Learn more at propane.com. Maybe I'll win.
Welcome back. My guest today is Nick Weinberg-Lynn. Nick is heading up a project that's creating one of the largest renewable fuels plants in the world. And believe it or not, it's in the San Francisco Bay Area. If our guests want to follow the progress about Rodeo Renewed and your work, how can they plug in and learn more and then follow the progress?
Yeah, so we created a website, rodeorenewed.com. It's got lots of information about the project, about renewable fuels, about where we are in the process. And interestingly enough, we're talking to you just before the public comment period closes. So it closes on December 17th. Where folks can consume the EIR. Of course, we'll then go to a series of public meetings after that. The other great thing about that RodeoRenewed.com is we've provided jobs, information, and opportunities, right? So if you happen to live in the San Francisco Bay or even the greater California area and are interested in getting involved in this project and the future of the facility, we've got both direct hire as well as labor tabs that you can get information and involved in the project.
And as you start thinking about going to market, are you having a lot of interest from trucking companies and I guess truck stops? But mainly I'm curious about trucking companies that want to make sure that they run Phillips 66 renewable diesel in their fleet.
Absolutely, right? And you're speaking to areas that typically are more difficult to decarbonize. You're talking about off-road, we're talking about trucking, talked about airlines earlier. I think these industries recognize that being able to run a renewable transportation fuel with their existing engines is very important, right? You can make carbon reductions tomorrow. And that's why, you know, this facility, you know, the facility that we're transforming and the fuel that we're making really has a great marketplace in California, I think broader as we start to look across the spectrum.
I know that a lot of the work I do, we focus in that medium duty, heavy duty space, both on road and off road, as you say. Yep. And at least the work we're doing with a wide variety of industries and markets, electrification, or even really hydrogen, it's just not even in a 2-decade plan, yep. Right? And so they are committed to either diesel or something cleaner than diesel, and they step through it, natural gas, propane, renewable fuels. So it's brilliant to see what Phillips 66 is doing in that area. And I'm well aware of just how different the air quality will be because of your work. One of the fun traditions we have here is to thank our guests for appearing on Path to Zero and spending some time with us. We'll plant a tree in your name in a national forest. Now, I think that you are a real Californian, so we're going to just talk about California forest for a little bit, but we love to go to the Sierra National Forest. We love to go to El Dorado National Forest, but you may have a favorite place somewhere that you enjoy, but where could we plant a tree in honor of your time with us today?
No, that's what a great idea and a great opportunity. I'm an Eagle Scout and grew up camping in the Sierras, so I'll stay centered in the Sierras. It's fantastic memories, and just took my three kids that I'm raising locally out here. We were in the Sierras a couple of months ago, and it was a great opportunity to show some of the outdoors.
Well, congratulations on being the Eagle Scout. Nick, one of the fun traditions we have on Path to Zero is we have special powers, and we love to give our guests a magic wand. And there are a few rules around that magic wand. You only get to use it for one wish, and that wish has to really be able to be accomplished within a year. So one wish in a fairly short time frame. But if we were to hand you the magic wand and say, Nick, how would you use this to change the discussion around climate in the world as you see it, and you need to have that accomplished in the next year, how would you use your magic wand?
So I'd take my magic wand and I'd make it clear to governments, to citizens out there, that there is no magic wand. That there is no magic bullet to this. And folks have set ambitious goals out there. And sometimes those deter real progress. And it won't be something overnight, right? You look at our project and you look at reducing carbon intensity of transportation fuels by 65%. And you can do it tomorrow. We're taking 1.4 million cars off the road from an emissions equivalent standpoint. And that sounds great. But if you, in the mindset that you have, you think there is a magic wand where you can go to full electrification tomorrow, that project doesn't sound the same. And so I think folks need to realize, and the people setting the legislation and the rules and getting in front of it and writing and talking about the climate issue, that there is no magic wand to get there. And we need to make incremental progress along the way. And sometimes looking at those progress in the path, if you look at it in totality, that's when things can be done and can be exciting.
What a great use of your wand. And I hope you get that opportunity, because I think that is a story that needs to be told. There's so much of transportation, particularly, cannot electrify, right? It's just not in the cards, either for cost or weight or duty cycle. Electrification is not a choice. As we know, electrification today, they have to go, and they rely on diesel. So they mm-hmm. have to go to a cleaner product, and you're providing them something that not only is cleaner, but it rapidly moves towards decarbonization. Anything else you want to tell our listeners about what you're doing or the work that's going on there?
You know, just how exciting it is to be at the forefront of this and really to take a step back. And it's been great to see California and a lot of the legislators and folks that are in elected officials that are crafting the policy to be able to have these conversations and to talk about the technical aspects of what differences we can make here and focus not just on ambitious goals, but focus on carbon reductions that we can make in the near term, in the short term, and really how we can partner to do things at scale.
Nick, let me just ask you, I know you're a chemical engineer. You said it yourself. You work for a big oil and gas company, Phillips 66, kind of the common narrative is so often that, you know, oil and gas is to blame for these problems. And there's no, we should cut them out of the future, right? They have created the problems. There's no way they're going to be a part of the solution. Kind of give us the chemical engineer's viewpoint of that statement.
Yeah, it can be frustrating, right, to hear that discussion. And the way I think about it is we're an energy company and we're here to provide reliable, affordable energy. And the world needs that. You know, even California needs it. Even the Bay Area needs it day in and day out. And we do it at a scale. We do it at a pace. And it's only when we don't have that energy that people really perk up and wonder about it. So, you know, Phillips 66 continues to be innovative and forward thinking, looking at what's next and what's part of the transition, realizing that we do need to make carbon reduction goals and we do need to start to get there. We do need to reduce the carbon intensity of our fuels. And we as a company, us as a site, we are doing our part in that end. And really the energy industry is innovative and transformational in that aspect.
Yeah, I think one of the learnings for me, I'm doing this for a couple of years, just really following this discussion, is that while the innovation may come from anyone, it could come from a Bill Gates breakthrough company, it could certainly come from an Exxon or a Phillips 66, but most likely the scale is going to be such scale that it's going to require a big industry, whether it's IBM or Amazon or Phillips 66, the scale is going to be so massive that it's going to take big industry to get behind it. So really proud of what you're doing and congratulations on the work you're doing in the Bay Area to move them to a cleaner style of diesel fuel.
Appreciate it. Great discussion. Thanks.
Nick, we're going to wish you all the best with Rodeo Renewed. We'd love to have you come back. We're going to follow your progress and we're going to see how it all goes for a year or two, but congratulations. And to everyone else listening, see you next time on Path to Zero.
Thank you for listening to Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.